So very, very welcome to Secrets of Desperate Performers. How many performers have we got in the audience? Four, fantastic. And a dad with a rather frustrated 13-year-old, or a 13 with a rather frustrated dad? Sorry, that sounded a bit obscene, didn't it? It's a bit rude for so early.
13-year-old as well.
We'll come to you later. My name is Sabrina George. I'm a stand-up comic. I'm doing a show here at 7:10 every evening called Crime Comedy and Me, because I actually am a criminal. I have been for a long time, and my family are all white-collar criminals. And both my brothers have actually been incarcerated. You can believe that or not, if the case may be. Anyway, I'll come talk about that in my show. I also MC quite a lot. Here comes Janice. Come on, sweetie. We've started. Come and sit down here. Don't worry, hon. Come and sit down and we're just getting going.
Sorry, everyone. That was awful, Sabrina. Apologise.
They do this every day. Seriously, this is all scripted.
Appalling. Hello, I'm Janice. I'm so sorry. It's completely not my fault. But what have I missed?
We're just talking and introducing everyone.
So really?
Janice will introduce herself. Matt Ford, stand-up comic, and he'll talk a bit more about what he's doing here in the festival. Janice Baer, stand-up comic.
That's the time again.
Also has been in a two-act, two-man, two-woman show. And she acts, and she's got a lot of a multifaceted performance.
I'm doing a children's show here.
And she's doing a children's show, which she'll tell you about later. And Lynn Parker, she's a comedy promoter, mainly working with women on a production company called Funny Women. She's producer, inventor, promoter, and doing a fantastic job on that. And Al Pitcher, stand-up comic, improviser, and general. You've actually got quite an eclectic background as well, haven't you?
Yeah, I have.
And he's doing a show here called Wolfman.
Wolfcatcher.
There you go. he's a very close friend of mine as well. So let's get started. I'm going to ask Al to start off with, talking about getting into comedy, really. What was the pivotal point, if you remember it, that actually got you into comedy and made that action rather than just dreaming about it?
Going to the Tut and Shive Cabaret, which was in Islington in London, and watching a guy trying to juggle, it looked like fake mice, but I don't know if they were fake. I think that was the worry of the audience kind of going, oh crikey, they're real. And then him getting no laughs and thinking, I wouldn't mind giving this a crack. And that was the kind of, I think it's anybody's kind of downfall is when you start thinking you want to do comedy. Not no inspiration. No,
so it was actually seeing very bad comedy?
Yeah. And I've carried that trait on. Without the mice.
Honest.
And then what did you do?
I panicked. And then people started introducing me to their friends as a stand-up comedian. When I actually hadn't even done a gig. And then that whole thing of, you know, getting introduced and saying, oh, I will be in your sketches, or you must be funny kind of thing. You know what I mean? I just kind of thought you were picking your nose. But, and that's fine. And then just going for it. I think you just get like, you write your first 5 minutes, which I probably look back now and go, crikey, that was bad. That was horrific. But, and included something about the cause or something like that. That was my first ever joke. Something about fancying the cause. Yeah, the bloke from the cause. That was the joke. That was, just a winner. it still works.
Yeah.
But yeah, no, I think it's just going for it, isn't it? You just, you know, I think you go into the unknown and you don't actually know when you're starting comedy. Do you know what I mean? Everything's an adventure then, and then you get 4 or 5 years in and become a real cynical bastard. and understand that people are pretty pricky and no one's your friends, and you get really paranoid, thinking that this whole show is about me, and someone else is going to come out from the back of the curtain and hunt me down.
This is actually sound balance that you can sit back in your chair.
Okay, I just quite like that. Kind of, it feels quite rock and roll, doesn't it? It feels like I'm just going to get a guitar out, and Eric Clapton unplugged.
Yeah, because stand-ups without a mic just there feel quite naked. You have to have one, don't you, like that?
I'll be trying to wear a radio mic in my show, but...
Is it freaking you out?
I'm already projecting too much, aren't I, already? Yeah, it freaks me out a bit too much. just use the normal mic.
Brilliant. And Lynn, what about you? What was your action from sitting there thinking about working in comedy to actually doing it?
It didn't actually work like that, of course. I had a career in sort of PR and marketing. It was a good basis for comedy for a start off, really. But and I got asked to do the promotion for the launch of a club in London called The Improv. It was an American concept. And I was brought in to promote the English version of the club, which is now a pole dancing club, interestingly enough. So, very in brief, I came up against this unbelievable bastion of male chauvinism. I could not believe how male the world was, and the only women that ever appeared on the bill at the Improv were real hardcore. Really hardcore lesbians. I mean, you know, without being unbelievable, you know, I'm not being sexist about it, they were the absolute bobber booted, you know, short haircut, very unfeminine. And I think they booked them because they felt safe with them. And I just couldn't believe that there wasn't more women. And I vowed to do something about it. That was the turning point. I then got fired by the client, probably because I was a bit too outspoken. And came up with the idea of Funny Women, which took me 2 years to get it off the ground. And my original vision of it was this competition, this platform, so we could get more women into comedy, which 3-4 years down the line, I think, oh, Janice did in our competition, actually.
Runner-up last year?
Yeah.
Thanks very much.
And she might have a bit more to say about it, but from a performer's point of view. But for me, it's about working with female performers. I'm not anti-men, by the way, not in the least. And I just, it's about...
Didn't you marry one?
I have got, yes. And I have a son as well. He's quite interested in the comedy world. Don't do it. it's about making sure that... And I'm not, you know, I'm not championing women's rights in comedy either. It's about just making sure we have more of a balance, which I think is a good balance.
Getting there slowly.
Yeah.
And... I don't know whether, I think actually, Matt, can I ask you next? About you? What was your action to get you into comedy?
I used to do, at school, I used to do impressions of the teachers and things. And I used to do it at school talent shows. I used to watch Rory Bremner and Alistair McGowan. And I think I was about 15 and I went to see Alistair McGowan in Nottingham. And I'd had 2 pints, I was wasted. And I went up to him and I said, oh, I can do impressions. And I had a really nice conversation with him, actually. And I did kind of... John Motson, who's a football commentator. And we had this lovely conversation where both of us did John Motson together, and he said, you ought to try and do 5 minutes in a comedy club. And he gave me a fellow's number called Daryl Martin, runs a club in Nottingham, and I rang him up, and then I did my first open spot about 6 months later.
Why did it take you 6 months?
Well, because he didn't know who I was, so he wasn't just...
Oh, I see, so he...
He just said, yeah, he said, look, you can do this one in May. And then I did that, the first 5 minutes.
And did it go well?
No, it was rubbish. I enjoyed it. I was 16 years old on stage. I mean, wow. It didn't matter what I was doing, really. I loved it. So that was really cool. Yeah.
Brilliant. And what about you, young Janice?
I went to college, did an MA at King's College in Rada, and a group of girlfriends that I know, we just got together and did a show in London. And... just put it on ourselves and wrote it ourselves, and it was rubbish. It's absolute pants. But there's just two of us that were really enjoyed working on it and working together. A friend of mine called Susan, and then we were in a double act called Susan and Janice, and brought 7 Edinburgh shows up to the festival, and it was great. And then Susan got a brilliant, fabulous television career. And so I did stand-up by myself. And here I am. But, that's what happened.
And what was the action between realising that Janice had a splendid career in television and you actually going on stage on your own? Janice is about to have a fabulous career.
Absolutely.
What was the action?
What happened was, when we came up to Edinburgh for our first double act year, we were approached by a couple of agents. And we went with one of them, and she had sent us both for fabulous auditions. I'd go for great auditions. I just never get them. Susan is, this is what I'm going to say. Susan's really pretty. She's got big tits. That's why she's on television. But no, she's actually really talented as well. She's the girl. Does anyone ever watch Hardware?
Yeah.
Did anyone watch it? She's the girlfriend in that. And that was her big break. And it's really made, you know, it's great.
I should say here that Janice is fabulously talented as well.
She can say that. Thanks. Thanks. If I had big tits, though, I'd be on television. No. But I like live stuff. I've always liked live performance. And I don't know about, is anyone else an actor here? Going into an audition, you're all actors. Going into auditions, this is this really weird situation where they're going, okay, right, now you're crossing the road and you're a woman and you've got a child and you're telling the child, don't go yet, okay? Now, do you get that? It's because the road's busy. He might kill him. Do you understand? And you've got one line and you're like, I don't, there's no bit of my head that can go. And I end up going, you're right there. I can't do it. Auditions,
it's,
I love.
So demoralising.
Yeah,
the casting thing is just, you feel really dirty after.
Yeah. Oh,
it's terrible.
And the great ones are the ones, all the auditions for the adverts, because you know, and you taste it, and it's just like an explosion of fabulousness in your face. Go. Just what, you know?
I had to play a dead body once.
Hey! How can you audition for that?
And they were like, and I said, is that, and they went, yeah, we're happy with that. Just walked out. Didn't get it.
No. But I didn't get it.
I think it's a dead guy that got it.
Right, do you want a quick vote now? Who's been the most honest, do you think? Al Pitcher. Oh, Lynn Parker, Janice Fair, or Matt Ford? Oh, I think.
Thanks so much.
Do I keep calling Jason Manford? Now the next question is a sort of sneaky one, really. If you could have been or would have written someone else's material, who would you like to have been or? I'm not necessarily you do it. Well, I keep talking about Richard Pryor, which I don't really want to be Richard Pryor, but he's one of the comics I really, really admire because he crosses so many boundaries. He's black. He's brought up in a brothel. His mother was a prostitute, and he was from Tennessee in the 40s. That's where he's brought up, and his comedy completely translates to absolutely everybody. I think he's a genius from that point of view. I'm sort of white middle class, South African parents, born in Canada. Brought up in a hippie commune virtually, and to translate that I actually have a very strong criminal past is kind of interesting and quite a challenge because most people don't believe me, which is one of the reasons I constantly get voted out as the biggest liar. So Matt, what about you?
Whose material would I have liked to have written?
Or comic that, not necessarily be yourself, but who do you most sort of admire?
Steve Coogan. Mm. I like him because I've seen some of his stand-up stuff which I think is great. And I quite like the impressions and things, but to create so many different characters that are all so funny in different ways, he's versatile, and he's a good actor as well. His films, some of them have been pretty rubbish, but I think he always shines out, Steve Coogan. And I'm a big fan of Alan Partridge. I used to do an Alan Partridge tribute act in Nottingham, and I used to, this is awful, I used to dress as a middle-aged man and get more action with the ladies dressed as a man nearing 60 than I did. You're meant to look surprised, for crying out loud. So that was good. When I first watched it, the key thing with Coogan, when I first watched Alan Partridge about 10 years ago, I thought it was real. I think I must have been 12 years old, and I thought, God, I can't believe this bloke's allowed on the telly. And then just I enjoy being fooled. I think that's quite nice. Mm. It's quite nice to go, God, I was wrong, but wasn't it funny? So, Steve Coogan.
Steve Coogan. What about you, Janice?
My favourite comic is Jason Byrne, because I just love. Does anyone know Jason Byrne? Stuff. It's he's just wild. He's got so much energy, and it's just madness is going to happen at any moment. But it's all about live stuff there. I mean, I just like live things happening and somebody making something happen in a room. And I've seen him, just do these crazy things. Like there was people that wanted to go to the audience, go to the toilet at the same time, and he herded them like cattle for like 20 fucking minutes. It was hilarious. And I don't know, I like that. I like the live sort of stuff. But I'm not really someone who wants to ever emulate someone else, because I'm too much involved with myself.
Well done. What about you, Lynn?
It's an interesting question for me, isn't it? Because I would have liked to have written some of the famous sitcoms. I think as a woman of my age group, AbFab was just spectacular. I mean, just coming particularly from a PR background, it just, there's one particular episode very early on where she goes on a complete bender and gets drunk, and they come through the window, and she's got her bodysuit, which was fashionable at the time, all undone. I did that loads of times. but you know, there's aspects of that I really love, and I would love to have written that. From my early childhood, my absolute heroes were Morecambe and Wise. I grew up on Christmas specials, Morecambe and Wise, brilliant. I've been watching them back, and they just are so funny. And I don't know how you write. They did sit and write, and Eric Morecambe was a very interesting character. So something about them really fascinates me. And more modern day and of now, I think The Office, Ricky Gervais, absolutely brilliant yeah, to write that stuff. And like you, that element of when the first few episodes were on, is this, am I meant to laugh or not? And then realising it was a joke, I just thought was wonderful. I'm interesting to see if Extras is going to develop in the same way, but very interested in that.
What about you, Mr. Pitcher?
I think the funniest, Billy Connolly being the greatest stand-up, just the storytelling of, you know, a man that can tell, you know, just a story of someone in the street, it's just incredible. And but I still think every day, I don't mean it in a bad way, but every day things that happen are still the greatest material. Yeah. You know, I still try and keep my show pretty live where things can happen. But, you know, I've got a little godson who's like 3. And whenever I go and see him, he just cracks me up. You know, it's just that complete kind of, he looks at you and then walks into the corner and you know he's filling his nappies. He just kind of grimaces. I mean, he just going, that is the funniest. I wish I could write that. And then they took him to the doctors the other day because he had sore testicles, right? And they're all like red. And he's writing to horses. And it worked out there that he was watching Seabiscuit with one of those kind of stick horses. And he was like smelling himself. And I just think he's great. I've already signed him up. I think everyday occurrences are still the funniest bits of material. And like Janet says, it's like that whole kind of thing with Byrne and like Ross, you know, Ross Noble, who, you know, it doesn't seem quite the same with Edinburgh without Ross Noble in a way, you know, and just that kind of, and Eddie Izzard pushed barriers for me as well. I thought he was incredible.
Ended a bit. Right, can we have a quick vote then? Who thinks, on the honesty level, Matt Ford? Janice Fair. Very good. Lynn Parker. And Al Pitcher.
Yeah.
Al Pitcher, he's won.
Yeah.
It was the baby filling his
nappy. Yeah, that's, no one would say that, really.
And Janice, I'm going to ask you this first. What most annoys you about the profession? I'll just start with, give her a bit of thinking time. The thing that most annoys me, one is the sexism, obviously, which you've already talked about. The other one is the massive amount of travelling. I wish you could be teleported to the venue. That would be really nice, to do sort of 4 hours on a coach and then 4 hours back at midnight to do some sort of Manchester or whatever. Yeah. Is to me actually the working bit involved. Everything else is fun and fine, but that's the bit I find most annoying. What about you?
Probably the most annoying is, well, I agree with Lynn, it is just very strange. But I mean, I think in every industry, women come against it. I've got a friend who works selling drugs. No, she was, and put that there for a big chemical, you know. She's, yes, the far chemical company. Oh my God. So no, she went into, she'd been working there, she's a really hard worker. She went in, asked for to get promoted, and he went, yeah, but they're all men on your team, they'll fancy you. And then when she handed her notice in, because she got fed up of it all, went going to travelling, he went, have you got a work visa? And she went, yeah, I have. He said, she'll be able to get work over there. And she went, yeah, I'm going to get work over there. He went, yeah, you can do lap dancing. I know, but people, you know, like, it happens, I think, in every industry. And I think that it is in this industry as well. And it is very, very frustrating.
Yeah.
And that's my, that is the most annoying thing. Other than that, people not laughing at my jokes. That's more annoying.
What about you, Matt?
I think there are too many egos. I know comedians have egos, otherwise they wouldn't get on stage, but the best thing about it is when you meet someone who's really nice, because the best comedians you'll meet will become your best friends. And me and Al get on really well, and you meet some brilliant people, some really creative, funny, genuinely warm people. Then there are this other bunch of gits that are just miserable, and you think, why are you, your trade is meant to be laughter and warm.
Yeah.
And all they can do is backbite, moan about other people, and you think, get over yourself. Because you'll laugh more if you're less cynical, won't you? If you broaden your mind a bit, you'll enjoy yourself. So I just find it hard. Sometimes you come up against people who are like a brick wall. And, of course, you get them in every industry, but it seems particularly ironic that in comedy there are so many Mardy bugs.
And what do you do with that if you're at a gig and you've got...
I like winding them up.
You do?
I like, yeah, yeah, yeah.
Like what?
Because they've got a lot of egos, and so, yeah, nearly everyone's got a mini-series with Channel 4 starting, or a pilot with Sky. Really, how's it going? Yeah, yeah. Well, funnily enough, they were talking to me about doing it. Really? And you see these defences, these alarm bells are ringing. Oh, so who's your contact? Who's your contact? It's a lady called Marie? Oh, I haven't heard of her. And sometimes they bowl back. They say, oh, Marie, yeah, 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 yeah. She's, well, she's doing quite a lot for me. I think she quite likes me. Well, good for you, mate. She doesn't exist, so. Wind them up.
What about you, Al?
Yeah, I think it's quite similar. Also, services. When you're driving up and down the motorway, you just get ripped off. I just go straight edge. £8 for, like, you know, a peanut, something like that.
Yeah.
But Marks and Spencers have now gone, gone into services, and it's changed comedians' life. You've gone from Ginsters. Costa Coffee and Marks and Spencers, because you can buy decent food now, and that's my only thing. Okay. At the end of the day, it's still the greatest job in the world. You just get up and be a clown. And I think, you know, and this festival, especially, you find out the best. I don't know about you guys, right? I don't know if you've found out. Have you found out amazing things?
No, we've been here for like a day.
You've been here for a day. Oh, it's terrible. You get like you feel the best and the worst up here of who you are, what you are, what you're doing.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, sometimes it's lovely having family and loved ones come up and just kind of hang out. She only really did.
Honest.
Get
your votes in.
But yeah, and comedians' egos are always gonna, you know. But it is quite funny when you amuse yourself at their expense. There's a few J-Lo's walking around.
That's me. I've had my bum cynically implanted. What about you, Lynn?
Sort of carrying on the ego theme, there are two things. There's the female divas of comedy, who will remain nameless, who are really far too grand and can't be asked to possibly appear in a lineup with a load of other women, which really pisses me off, major. But that sort of improved a bit. And then the other thing is these absolutely dreadful, and they're not, there's probably a handful of management people who treat me, and I think probably a few other promoters, like a piece of shit, putting it, I probably can't say that on the radio, but, you know, they're doing us a favour, you know, letting us, even talking to us, you know, who are you, and you get this whole, you know, and actually, I know that I'm a new girl on the block, and I'm, you know, haven't been in the comedy industry for 20 years, but actually I've got a lot of other skills that I bring to the party, and it really annoys me when they just say, well, you know, who are you, and... You know, our act will only do it for £8,000, which is like 10 times the budget I've got to do it on. That really gets me. You can see I'm seething here. Makes me very angry.
And how does that anger sort of come out?
Oh, probably in a terrible bit, like you were saying, you know, you get all insecure. And I've had a couple of instances over the last couple of days where I've just thought, no, Lynn, this is not the way to behave. You know, you've got to be very cool as a promoter, producer. And I hate the way it affects me like that, because, you know, like all of us, I've got an ego as well. My ego isn't about getting on stage and performing. It's about making sure my shows are the best shows, you know. I want to put on the best showcase show at the Fringe. That's how I set out to do it. So people stopping me from doing that really incenses me.
Do you go and click them?
No, I go home and cry. No, I do get very depressed about it, actually. I think that's a... I think comedy is the world is full of depressives, so I fit in very well there.
Do you really? Because I think that's one of the myths, for me, is actually...
That everybody's not
depressive. That comics are actually manic depressives.
Oh, well, they're all on stage to do therapy, aren't we? I mean, yeah.
I don't know, it's always been my experience. I've had there's a small little group, but the majority of them actually are quite happy, well balanced people, not like Al Pitcher.
I
think I'm pretty well balanced, but I don't know, I'm not in special K, am I? Do you know what I mean? That's a well balanced diet. I'm a bit Cocoa Pops. I don't quite know what's going to happen with me. But no, I think people are well balanced. But I think deep down under the skin, there are everybody's insecure, and this place brings out.
Mm-hmm. That's it.
It really does, you know. But people are. You've got, you know, I'm happily married, you know, and everything in my life's great. But you know, I still kind of freak out and, you know, want to run up the walls and stuff like that. I don't think I've ever run up the walls.
Yeah, because in Edinburgh, because those of you guys are just starting out, you get a venue, you do all this work for a year, you come up here and you do all your stuff for it, and then you suddenly realise that there's somebody who has got maybe 15,000 people handing out flyers for them, they've got press coverage, the critics might not like them, but that's immaterial, they sell out, and they come up to you and they go, I've sold out, and you've got to really try and keep your head separate from that, and just go... I'm doing what I want to do, and I'm doing it to the best of my ability, and not buy into all that sort of stuff. And some of these people can come up again. Some of it's more tend to be the guys. I was with three guys yesterday who were all telling me about their sellout shows, and one of the guys had two audience members come up to him, shake his hand, and said, "Brilliant! Shame you didn't have a bigger audience." Oh. And that was lovely. And it turned out his audience was 12, not the 75 he told me about. Oh.
That's a male thing, dare I say that, though. You know.
Yeah, there are some girlies who do it as well.
There are some women who do it.
But it's just like trying to get your head separate and just go, whatever anybody says to you, you do what you do, and you do it as best as you can in whatever situations you can. Oh, I went to see a dear friend of mine. I'm doing a play at the Assembly Rooms. I won't tell you what it was. But he got very cross with his promoter afterwards because apparently someone had walked behind the wall as he was doing his play, and this had completely thrown him. And the next show I went to see was a stand-up comic working with drilling going on outside, people coming in and out of the gig and whatever, and this guy was completely unthrown. As comics, that's what you are quite used to, really. You're quite used to working in different environments, which brings on to my next... Oh, I've got to have a quick vote. Vote. Yes, can we all vote on this? Matt Ford, who's been the most... Very good. Janice Fair.
I failed.
Lynn Parker. Grand and Al Pitcher.
Yeah.
Oh, Matt, very good.
We're not competitive, are we?
Lynn, I'll start with you on this one. This is something, again, I find intriguing. I didn't expect this when I came into comedy. It's the worst ever gig. My worst ever gig almost all include a chronic amount of violence. Which is kind of surprising. People getting mashed up. There's the one gig I've already talked about is it was in Wellingborough, which is quite a posh part of Britain, and I was supposed to be a male comic would call it the headliner. I was on at the end, as far as I was concerned. The guy opening was relatively new. We arrived at the gig. And nobody was sitting down. There didn't seem to be any chairs. There were people milling around, and there was a chair on the floor with a mic on it. And there was a toilet behind where the mic was, sort of between the audience and the mic. And there was an exit door. And the first guy got on, and he did his stuff. And I said, you know, do you want me to open it for you? Because it looked quite tough, and the guy was relatively inexperienced. And it took about 3 minutes for a proportion of the audience to start throwing lighted cigarettes and matches at him. And then beer cans followed, and this comic just completely lost it and screamed for 10 minutes. And I thought, oh, this is going to go well. Then the next guy, who said he was in the SAS and said he'd had 5 years' experience, was going on. And I thought, oh, this is an opportunity for me to quickly go to the loo, which took me about 3-4 minutes. I came back to find the mic back on the chair and no comics to be seen. The first guy had also disappeared. And the promoter came up to me and said, right, you'll go, Sabrina, with a bit of a wink. and I picked up the mic. And I had a great gig. I really, honestly, I did 45 minutes. We were supposed to do 2 hours in total. And I had really good fun, messing around, whatever. And I was really surprised at how well it went. I thought, oh, I'm a bit of a tough person. I've done very well. And then I came off, and people were patting me about and saying, oh, you're so brave, you're so brave. And what had happened about 5 minutes in was the main ringleader of the cigarette throwing, etc., had come out of the toilet behind me, his face completely covered in blood, and had exited, and I hadn't seen him, but they thought I had. So I looked incredibly macho at dealing with him. And some of the audits had actually followed him into the toilet and mashed him up quite a bit and had left. I'm quite surprised, and it continues to surprise me, how much violence there is if anyone's standing up on stage, being just messing around, having fun on stage. Some people find that quite upsetting and seem to react quite oddly. I can't say that's my worst ever gig. My worst ever gig generally was the first 10 months of doing stand-up, but I don't think I got a single laugh. Because there's a degree of energy that you can work with, but when you're doing gig after gig of people are politely checking that their shoelaces are tied or untied as the case may be, hoping that you'll quietly leave and go away, that to me was an aspect of being the worst. So Janice, on to what to, you know, either a single one or
I had a gig once where I turned up and there was basically four really people that looked like they'd been through both of the wars, and they really had. And my stuff's really dirty, right? So really dirty. And so that was the four of them and one miles back, and then there's the stage like miles away from them. And then the promoter was coming up saying, it's all right, the owner of the pub's coming back. He's been playing cricket all day and he's bringing the cricket team. So basically, I was waiting for 17 drunk men to arrive. And so that's what happened then, that these 17 drunk men arrived and stood at the back, and the guy that was comparing came on stage, walked down the audience. I can't even tell you. He walked down the audience, actually just had an individual chat with each table. Like, there was about three different tables, but you couldn't hear what he was saying to any of them. So he just basically looked like it was one person with a microphone. You could only hear one side of the conversation. And then he got back to where I was standing with the 17 men. And at that time, one of the 17 men were going, "Don't worry, love, you'll be grand. Go on, you'll be fine." You know, that it was like that. And I was going, I felt so unpowerful. It was awful. And then the guy came up and went, this is the first act, it's on. What's your name again? And Janice Fair. And he went, "Yeah, it's Janice Fair. Here." Handed me the microphone by the bar with these 17 men. And I have a tendency to overcompensate. That's what I do. Like I'm probably doing it now, basically. I overcompensate for stuff. And I really did. Oh, it's awful. The whole thing. But you know, that it was one of those gigs that you always learn something. Every single bad gig you have, unfortunately, I've had loads. But every single bad gig you have, you've learned something, you know, because even though it didn't go very well, I had a couple of things that I said to the people that been through the wars that kind of vaguely worked. And yeah, so that was my... It's not that interesting, but that was it.
Thank you, Janice. Al?
I was just thinking, it is quite amazing how I probably couldn't tell you my best gig, but I could tell you about five of my worst gigs. You know, I think the worst one was
Norwich.
Norwich was what had happened is I was comparing, and it was in a restaurant, and I was on, and I bought new trainers. And I could hear my trainer squeaking like that. And then I heard the food come out. When food, they get served food at, you know, gigs. And you just could, I could hear the knife and forks kind of hitting in. And I honestly, you know, I'm probably going to be voted out here and I'll go for the honesty thing. But I had like an out of body experience where I kind of just looked down at myself and I was just going to nothing. To absolutely nothing. And then it's... I remember just kind of walking past the guy to bring the guy on, and he just walked past and went, "Shit." And I went, "Oh, I'm so sorry." And it was just like giving them like a kind of, you know, a squirrel with a broken leg or something like that, you know. You shouldn't have been doing it. And, it was just so, and it is the worst part about that is you have to then, there's not like one exit. You have to walk through those people. And it just, you know, everyone has fear about getting up on stage and doing stand-up, but I think it's just that all that, the crap afterwards, you know, if it goes really bad, it's just brutal, you know.
There's a famous case of a comedy store with Simon Fanshawe, who some of you might know from radio and telly, and he hadn't done stand-up for quite a while, and he was doing something, anniversary at the comedy store, and he completely died on his arse, and it was summertime, and I don't know how he'd fortuitously brought his duffel coat with him, and he had to walk, again, the store's another one, you have to walk through the audience, and he wore his duffel coat, and nobody recognised him, he slunk out before the end of the gig, because it was just so awful. But it is art, but as Al said, you do, and Janet said, you do sort of learn, and you have to, or you give up, really. What about you, Lynn? Right, sorry.
I was just going to say, and you think people don't get worried about it. I did a 5-minute spot at the comedy store, and Dom Jolly from Trigger Happy TV went on as a character, and his whole thing was, I was driving down the road today, funny, huh? And that was like one of his jokes, and the crowd were just going, who the hell's this guy? Right? Because he was all made up. And then he went, yeah, life's good. And then within about 30 seconds, people had just started arguing. And then other people at the back were going, leave him alone, he's all right. And people go, no, up yours. And it just turned the place into a riot. People were like throwing stuff. And he got like booed off. And I was the other open spot to go on, right? Thinking, and as he walked past, he just went, that is the worst experience of my life. And just ran out the back. You know, cause, so even people like that get freaked out, yeah. You know. Mm. Nice anecdote.
Okay. I'm quite nervous about talking about this, actually, because my worst gig was my first Funny Women gig ever, which was a massive charity gig, and I won't take you 5 minutes to research who was in it, but I had all these big names from comedy, and we had a big theatre, and I got it wrong. I hired a director who was crap. He was sleeping with the writers that I'd hired. They tried to... I mean, it sounds like... It doesn't sound real, but this really happened to me. They blackmailed me, and they nearly... And it didn't end. We had the gig, which the curtain went up an hour late. I pissed off half the artists. It was we had a rainy night, so everyone was outside the theatre and no one could come in. We had thousands of goodie bags to stuff. I don't know if Hannah's disappeared now, but Hannah was actually my production assistant, who miraculously is still working for me, despite this. She was backstage. They hadn't even backstage. In big theatres, they have intercoms so that you can call artists on stage. Those of you in the acting profession will know that. This director didn't even put that on. So we had people running up and down the stairs to get the acts. It just was. I've had nightmares ever since about it. And it didn't stop with the gig, because the people I had problems with carried on. The writers tried to blackmail me for money. It was just fishy. You're probably going to hear me thinking, what am I talking about? But it was just... it was just a nightmare that didn't end. And there came a point where something happened and I thought, that's me, I'm finished. Funny Women is over. Before I'd even started, this is not going to carry on. And I wouldn't go into the whole story, but basically I had some very good friends in high places who helped me out. And it was because of them that I was able to get the award started the year after. And miraculously, we've survived it. But I think the lesson to be learned from that is that I actually made all my mistakes in one night. And I'm now extremely controlling. And anyone who knows me, works with me, knows that I'm very particular about the acts we have in our shows. I'm particular about, you know, how they look. And I suppose to a degree, I'm quite picky. And I don't think I'm particularly difficult, but having had a bad experience, as Al says, it makes you stronger, because you think, right, I'm not going to let... It's about control as well. And on that, the mistake I made was trusting people, thinking they were good at what they did, and then them letting me down. So I'm really, really careful now about who I hire in his acts. I work with a fabulous promoter, who I'll give a plug to, called Christian Knowles, who works with me on all my productions. and, you know, total situation of trust there. But it's taken me a long time to get to that stage. And that was 4 years ago.
Do you also interview everybody to find out who they're sleeping with?
Yes, I do. I'm just to make sure they're not sleeping with Christian or Janet. No, it's a horrible experience when something like that happens to you.
So do you have a little black book?
Oh, yeah.
You do? Is it quite big now?
No, it's small but select.
A few people come up. What about you, young Janice?
Matt.
But have I already asked you?
That's my nightmare game.
<So, laughs> This is mine. I had two. I'll be quick. The first one, I was 17, I did a gig in Mansfield, and it was full of these old coal miners, big, big men, mountains of men. And I died so badly. I remember halfway through, a mate of mine left, and another woman just went, "Oh, come on, help him out." And then at the end, I went off, slunk off, and the promoter came on the compound and said, "Matt Ford, wasn't he shit?" And they went, "Hey!" Like that. The other one I did wasn't a comedy gig. You get some comedians say, "No, I'm not going to do that," and they're really quite particular about their art. I'll do anything, right? And I did this thing in Northampton. It was called the Blast Off Game Show. And I played Bobby Babylon, 70s funkster from space. And it was just like, it wasn't on tape, it was just like for a nightclub thing, right? And I had to get a skinhead, wear this green neon suit and this big pink neon shirt. And we used to do a game, like, you know, the custard pie challenge. And it was my job to get all the custard pie mix. Couldn't get any, so I just got some squirty cream. We'd had it on stage for an hour, and under these things, it just turned to, like, yellow slop, right? And we all these students had just come up, and the guy had asked them a question, and I'd have to custard pie them. And they got pied if they... it was the yes or no game, so they said yes or no, pie them, or if they stalled, pie them. And this massive Scott, Hell's Angel, came out of the curtain. I'm quivering with this thing. The host didn't help me out. He went, "What colour is green?" And he said, "You are." Battered him with it. And he's, usually when you hit people with a custard pie, their heads go back. His face just stayed rigid. And he peeled the paper plate off. And he just said, "Babylon! You bastard!" Chinned me. All these students were just going, "Nah!" It was on one of these stages, so I really hit the deck. And he just stood on my chest, got these custard cream things, put one in my mouth, and went, "You're going to get it." The thing that wound me up, this was peculiar, wasn't that this guy could kill me. But he kept calling me Babylon, and that's not my name. And I said, "My name's not Babylon!" In my ears, in my eyes, I had an eye infection for 2 weeks. It was the worst day of my life. So that was mine.
Did you learn anything from it?
Yeah, to get proper custard pie mix. Because it doesn't cause infection if you get it in your face.
And the name label. But anyway, go to a quick round. Who's been the most on this? Al Pitcher. Lynn Parker.
Oh, the women's vote then.
Yeah. And one bloke.
Oh,
yeah, Janice Fair. And Matt Ford.
Hey. What's the best story?
Very good.
Yeah.
That's from Babylon. You're gonna get it, Babylon.
Al, do you think awards or being on television makes much of a difference? What's your attitude towards it?
Yep, I think TV does. But I think you can do bad TV now. I think that doesn't harm you as it used to. I think there used to be only like four channels or whatever. But now there's so many cable channels, you can do absolutely anything, but it can still be hidden. It seems like, I think TV companies know that. If they've got like Channel 4, they've got E4, and they'll put someone on E4. I don't know why am I doing this, I'm breaking but like E4, and then they'll groom them through to be like Channel 4. I like Jimmy Carr, but he has done some terrible TV, and I really think it's awful, but he's still massively famous, and he's still, the amount of money he gets and the amount of kind of acclaim, fair enough, good on him. But, I think he'd be the first to admit some of the projects he's done have been quite dodgy.
I think he very much publicises that.
Yeah, maybe he does. But I mean, for me, TV, I don't know if I work on radio, so I don't know about TV. But if the right thing came along, yeah, I think
it's good. What would be the right thing, do you think? Have you got any formats in mind?
The only one I've ever come up with is with this custard pie thing.
Would you do TV? I actually did a reality TV show called The Sack Race. Some of you may probably haven't seen it. On BBC Two at 10 o'clock at night. And I think there was a complete resounding silence from the public. I thought it was brilliant. I loved it. It was 5 hours of improvising. The premise of the show was to go into a gift shop as an employee. I was supposed to replace the assistant manager and get myself sacked by 3 o'clock in the afternoon. Yeah. And I have, from my hippie background, I've got an absolute loathing, a real hatred for anything hippie. I feng shuied the shop. I did yoga and I was just appalling. I really was appalling. But the idea was not to get sacked before three, so I had to start off with these really lovely people liking me and do the inverse of what you do in comedy, of get them to hate you so much that they won't even let you finish to 5:30. And the final straw was at 2:02, I said, have you noticed the energy in the shop is better? And by this time, they were, couldn't even make eye contact. They were just quivering with loathing. And then they said no, you know, and I said, well, actually, I've done the fantastic, you know, when I made tea for you this morning, I actually put my early morning urine in your tea to help the energy. Oh. And the manageress, bless her, her name was Tracy, and she was just really sweet, and she just looked at me just absolutely disgusted, and she said, I think it's a complete waste. I think it's really disgusting to put waste products in people's tea. And I just thought, she's bloody well going to keep me on for another hour and a half. So I just said, well, I think it's a complete waste not to. And she just completely lost it. And she fired me. Again, I thought, very in a very civilised manner, she just said, could you please go right now? Pick up your bag, go right now, right now. And I said, what about tomorrow? I'll come in tomorrow. And she was like, no, right now. But she wouldn't actually say the word sacked. And then she said, I'll never have you back here again. I said, I think the owner will have me back. And she said, no, over my dead body. So I consider that being sacked. But that show is, I think it's shown on a satellite thing every weekend. Someone who knows these things told me. It's repeated every weekend somewhere. And actually one person on the King's Road in Chelsea came up to me and said, you know, I've seen you on telly, and I was just really chuffed. And I said, oh, thank you very much. And that's really lovely. I really enjoyed it. And thank you very much. I really enjoyed doing the show today. Wow, you know, you were really amazing. You know, Dawn French. And that was about, yes, for X amount of television exposure. So I think it's a particular type of television exposure that you get known for. Zoe Lyons is doing a show here at 20 past 8. The flies are around. She did a survival reality TV show, and I think she had, again, massive exposure. Yeah. And not that many people recognised her. They recognised her at the time.
They did. When she won the Funny Women Awards last year, people immediately, it was like, because that kind of links in with the awards thing as well, that people kept saying to me, Zoe Lyons, I've seen her before. And they had, there was kind of a very slow, but, you know, recall settled in, and by the time the final, people knew she'd been on Survivor, and I think that, you know, made helped her actually, I think, to a degree.
Yeah, I think it's
gave a chance to revive it.
Small degree, I think it depends on how your exposure is. I mean, Jimmy Carr, to use him as an analogy, is actually wallpapered across the planet, or certainly across the British planet. He's on all the time, everywhere. In fact, these comics have brought out this picture of Jimmy Carr on, and you can cut it out, and it said, if you're suffering from Jimmy Carr withdrawal, put this on your screen so you don't miss out on Jimmy Carr. It's fucking brilliant. But I don't know. I had some stuff, and I'm not sure.
I think reality TV as well is kind of cut down stand-up or comedians to get an opportunity. I think, you know, I think people are willing to watch people. I was going to say in a room chatting, but you know, like the Big Brother phenomenon, you know, it's huge. You know, everybody's just, and I think that's kind of cutting out a lot of the writing, you know.
But that's the winning formula. In fact, you know, one of the things that, you know, well, we have a situation where we're currently live, it's about 9 events, all female, you know, shows, and we are working on our TV project, which I can't say too much about, but we're not doing reality TV because it's been done to death, you know. And we've actually been approached a few times, people wanting to follow the, you know, the us around the country while we do the awards. And actually, I think it gets in the way of what we're trying to do in terms of running a legitimate professional award that means something. Because otherwise I wouldn't have done this, I would have done the TV thing to start with. So, interestingly enough, as a producer, I'm looking at you know, the things very separately. You know, the awards is one thing, which is very, you know, hopefully it has a degree of prestige attached to it.
And do you think it's making an impact on the people
who won? I think it's, well, you asked the girls themselves, but, you know, I was with Emma Fryer last night, who was a finalist in our awards this year, and she won the So You Think You're Funny semi-final last night, and she came off stage and she said, I wouldn't be here if it wasn't for funny women. I wouldn't have done this. And I think our awards are very specifically, without being, you know, women need that extra leg up, they need that bit of extra confidence. I think what we, by having the Funny Women Awards, it does actually help those, it's more difficult for a woman in this business, so it gives them a chance to perform in a different environment. So, yeah, I think it has made a difference, and I'm very pleased when the girls go on and do the other bigger competitions. You know, interestingly enough, they're not that much bigger. I think we had 150 entries this year, and I think So You Think You're Funny, given it's boys and girls, was 250. So it's quite interesting, actually, because, you know, we don't think of ourselves as a big award, but looking at the numbers game, and we've had to put on extra events this year because we couldn't see all the girls. And, you know, what we try to do is everyone that enters, we see. We do see, there's very few people we don't see. They either don't qualify in some way or we don't. So I think we have made an impact. But we're still, you know, we've still got the old problems of not enough women in the Perrier nominations and all this, but, you know, I think that's a numbers game as well. I think it's because we don't have enough women out there.
To me, as a stand-up, it buys into what we were saying earlier about working on the fringe, is that, you know, I will go to gig after gig after gig, and there will always be only other men on the bill.
Yeah.
And some of them are fantastic, you know, Matt and I are all mates, and they're really great, and they're fun things to work with, but sometimes you go in and you know, it is so much about testosterone, it is so much about the best wanking gag they can possibly have come up with. Generally includes my cleavage. And you come out of it, and it's not so much that you're bothered by that, it's just, to me, it slightly distorts what I'm trying to do. And when I'm working with other women, it's like we're much more able to talk, give each other feedback about what we're doing. And the only experience up until Funny Women turned up was lesbian gigs, where you go in and you're working with a completely female audience, and you're working with totally women, and you could feel the difference. And I can't really specify what it was, but there was a difference in what you were doing. And you tended to be judged much more on the comedy you were doing rather than what your status was, or whether you were covering areas that men like to cover. Men love covering periods. I don't know why. Periods, sanitary towels, they love covering it. And women very rarely do.
Actually, yeah.
Yeah.
Women don't like talking about it at all.
Matt talks about it non-stop.
Oh, I don't talk about it at all. Oh, don't give me that. I don't talk about periods. I didn't even know what they were till about 6 months ago. So I write any decent material on them.
But we're always open to criticism. I don't know if any of you have read the papers or are aware, but our winner this year, Deborah Jane Appleby, is a transsexual. She started out life as a man. And I knew that. She's entered the competition for 2 years on the trot. She was very upfront about the situation when she entered. She said, how do you feel about it? I said, I'm fine, doesn't bother me. You know, you're a woman as far as I'm concerned. She is in every single way, I think, barring one little bit of paperwork. And yeah, it's a level playing field, all comers, you know. And why should, you know, if she, and she won this year. But, you know, we had two very sexist bits of male press. Oh, well, you know, she ain't one, she's really a man. Oh, please, you know. And she said to me, the annoying thing is, they wouldn't have done that if I'd been black, a midget, disabled. She said they would have, you know, it would have been dealt with in a very different way. It was dealt with in a very sexist, unprofessional, ugly way.
Can I just interject there? Because I remember Deborah telling me one of the articles said, Deborah Jane Appleby was a man and one funny woman. Jenny Eclair is the only woman that's won the Perrier. Does that mean that Jenny Eclair was a man? Great angle. But there you go, that's a good
one. And you read it on Name and Shame.
I don't know. Deborah told me that. That was the
So what about you, Janice? Television, awards?
Oh, I think television definitely does help because it helps people's profiles, and if you've done something good, as you say, like then you know people will come and see you because that's how a lot of people watch television, don't they? Susan, I don't, as I say, I'm not. I have done loads of auditions, but haven't got anything very big. Big Tit Susan. she did an advert. Now, what? Can't remember who it was for. It was with that Kemp guy. What's his, one of the...
Ross Kemp.
And it was a nice advert. It was a really funny advert, anyway, where she was having dinner with him. And
Fruit and Fibre?
No.
That was years ago, wasn't it?
So. Oh, I can't remember.
Yeah, no, they were in the restaurant.
Like, yeah. And so she just did an advert. And number one, the advert, you get thousands of pounds, from tens of thousands of pounds, which is going to affect anybody's career. But also, people remembered her from that. So when she was going up for other parts, they'd go, oh, she's the one, and then, oh yeah, I remember her. So it's because it's exposure, any kind of exposure like that, any is good, even though it's just an advert. So I think even adverts can help, which is ridiculous, but true.
TV has an enormous impact, I think. I'm not a performer, so I see it from a different point of view. So I actually very much look at, you know, the acts that I've worked with who then suddenly break onto TV. And I think having winning an award, any award, a Perrier, Funny Women Award, So You Think You're Funny, BBC Comedy Award, any of those put you in front of that audience of TV producers. I mean, Edinburgh Fringe is awash with promoters and producers, all on getting accredited to come in and see your shows. They're coming to look at you because they're all doing a lot of, Al said, you know, sorry, it's called senile dementia, actually. They are looking for the next big thing that's going to make their programme a bit different, and, you know, that's how people like. I don't think Catherine Tate won any awards, but that's suddenly she was pitched onto TV, and now she's the big name that everyone wants to book for a comedy event.
But I used to gig with her.
Yes, she used to. No, she couldn't, and she did stand up.
She's a ginger minger in the promoter's mind. She was fantastic. She did the little old lady five-minute spots, the old filthy-mouthed old grandmother, and she was finding incredibly difficult because people couldn't work out
what to do with
her. What she was doing and what she was on
but
about.
But all it takes is one TV producer who sees that in a context or an idea, and, you know, they sell it in. So I think where awards work for you is they get you visibility. They get your name in the press, even if you used to be a man.
I got voted 8th best comedian in Zoo magazine.
That's good.
Hey. Yeah,
and it said no, I didn't have to do a top list. And then it just any press I've had since then has said that, and then said, but don't hold that against them. It's kind of...
Yeah. Who was number one?
Lee Mack.
Oh, right.
Yeah. It's about winning, though, isn't it? Yeah. I think if you're a winner or a finalist, it's all down to the... You know, coming from the world of PR, I know every trick in the book, you know, and it is about how it's built and how it's stated.
What about you, Matt?
I don't mind. I haven't got a problem with television. I've only been on it twice. Once was on... it was called BBC Choice then, before it was now BBC Three. And it was the semi-finals of the BBC comedy thing, and I didn't get. I was in the semi-final, but on the sheet when you first enter, you had to put like your most embarrassing moments and things, and I just filled them in honestly, quite like a fool. And, I did the gig obviously, and then I watched it when it was on telly 2 months later, and Jenny Eclair was kind of doing like the little links in between, and she went, next on is Matt Ford, whose most embarrassing moment at school was shitting his pants. I rang on my phone and said, video it, this is my big moment. And then the other time was I'm in Nottingham, and there's a programme about binge drinking, and it was 1998, and I'd gone to watch this England game at one of these big screen sports places, and someone had shaved my eyebrow off. And I was on telly. I wasn't being loutish. I just was lively, and with one eyebrow, and just going. And the interviewer said to me, "Which player do you think is going to make the difference today?" And I said Stuart Pearce, and he wasn't even playing. He'd retired a year before. Like an idiot. And my family had videoed that as well. So I think television's great.
Are you going to try and do anything for television?
I wouldn't mind. Oh, it's good fun, isn't it? I think, look, you can't always go out and go to a comedy club or
stuff like that. And it's nice when you come in from work just to sit down, put your feet up and, oh, no, I want to watch something funny. And if someone asks me to be part of something, I'll definitely do it, yeah. As long as it's not too stupid. But you can't take yourself too seriously, can you? Have a laugh. Who cares if you have to dress up like a fool and sing silly songs and, you know, get hit on the head with something. Just do it, man. Enjoy yourself. You won't get the chance again. And it's far better to say, you never guess what, I was that badger in that really crap television series. Rather than going, I could have been on telly and shouldn't I have done it? Because these people become cult heroes. Student unions get these people, don't they? Like, people who just used to be like little bit parts on old comedy shows. So that's good. You can get like a little cult following. I don't mind doing it, yeah.
So I did King's College with a very bad Kylie lookalike, who was, I think she was training to be a beauty therapist, and then an Australian guy who played someone no one had ever heard of, and very badly. And they were earning like twice as much as the comics, like 350 quid. And they hadn't even been on telly. And it wasn't funny, that's factual. right, last quick roundup. I'll actually ask...
Do you have to ask if
they're... Oh, my God, I keep forgetting the question. Are you feeling neglected and left out? Quick vote on who's been the most honest. Al Pitcher.
No.
Oh, yeah. Al.
Yeah.
Is that your resume?
A nice lady. Wearing a nice yellow dress there. Lynn Parker. Grand. And Janice Fair.
Okay.
And Matt Ford. Yeah. Oh, man, you won again!
Babylon!
final question is, where do you see yourself in 5 years' time, Janice Fair? Have you got a plan?
I've never been able to answer that question. Do you know, all my life, my dad's gone, okay, think of where you're going to be in 5 years, where you're going to be in 10 years. I can't do it. I don't know about anyone else, but it just terrifies me. I'm going to be a bag woman.
Yes.
And but like
good
that's
plan.
Such a
you can only get better from there. You can only exceed your expectations.
I know. At least, you know, yeah, I think it's impossible. I don't know. I just don't work like that. I've never been able to sort of aim and stuff. Where I'll be running the country. I have no idea.
How far ahead do you plan?
I don't. As you can see, I was late today. It's appalling. I'm a dreadful planner. And I think, to be honest with you, this isn't funny, but I am a depressive person. I'm a very depressive person. And when I look at my life and myself, I don't kind of go, oh, right, I can do this, and I'm going to be in comedy because I'm going to be the best or I'm the best at this. I do it because I love it, and there's nothing else I want to do. I don't plan, because I'm not going, wait, I'm brilliant. I don't know if I've explained that properly. but I think I'm just naturally too unhappy to imagine anything other than bag woman. So I don't think about my future.
Because Eddie Izzard was a phenomenal planner, apparently. His bedroom wall was completely lined with charts of where he was going to be at any particular time, and apparently he's now sort of by the doorway. He's sort of gone round and sort of knocked the door which next thing. And Jimmy Carr, another one, he did a great press release a few months ago, which I think is brilliant, and I know it comes from Jimmy because I know him a wee bit. And it was saying that he was seriously being considered to be the next James Bond. And I was like, okay, he's been doing acting. He might not hit James Bond, but he might become Blofeld. I don't know, but do you know what I mean? He really does plan miles ahead, and you can really see that in his career. I'm not a particular fan of his comedy, but his career is amazing. Mm. What about you, Lynn?
Oh, planning. Well, I'm coming from a sort of totally different kind of... I trained as a journalist, and then I went into sort of PR and marketing, so planning was always part of the process, and endless, especially when I worked in PR, all these endless meetings, 5-year plans, and having fog rolls we need for 3,000 staff in 5 years' time. Anyway, so planning became a bit of a, don't go there. And also I've learnt, being rather sort of middle-aged as well, that the best laid plans don't work out. A bit like Janice, I don't think I want to be a bag lady this time, but I think I'd like to feel that I had made a success of something, which may sound ridiculous, because I still don't consider myself as being 100% successful with what I've set out to do. And I think what I'd like to see is, you know, funny women still thriving, despite the nasty journalist who said to me 2 days ago, don't you think you've got built-in obsolescence? with funny women, and I said no, because I think women reach a different audience, and I think we have a I don't think we're trying to compete or do anything other than put on good comedy, and I think there is a platform for female comedy. So I'd like to carry that on, all the live stuff, the TV stuff, you know, just be myself and do it. I enjoy doing what I do. Like Janice, I can't imagine really doing anything else. And being an older, you know, being that bit older, I mean, I suppose it would have been lovely if I'd discovered this career 20 years ago. But on the other hand, being that bit older, I haven't got the baggage that I had 20 years ago. And I'm freer to do it because my kids are getting older and, you know, more expensive and all the other stuff. But I think that I definitely have a role to play in terms of the comedy agenda. Where that leads me, I don't know. I'd like to be more of a spokesperson for, I mean, I love doing this kind of thing. I'd love to do more of this. I do bits and pieces of radio. Yeah, I'd like to be recognised for what I achieved. And I think, in my view, that means achieving that bit more with it. That's a horrible answer, but...
No, it's very, very honest. Very, very honest. What about you, Mr. Witcher?
I'm going to go back to Norwich. I'm going to win those buggers over. I don't know, 5 years. I don't know. My wife's Swedish.
Oh.
Yeah. Yeah. So we might go live in Sweden.
Wow. Do they charge
eggs
in Sweden?
Yeah,
really?
In Swedish.
There's two
people. Learn Swedish better
come
in then.
Funny though. No, I wouldn't mind living there and then coming over, you know, having a bit of lifestyle and then coming over like for 3 days or something like that. Ryanair, that kind of, you know. But I don't know, maybe 5 years' time, see me in that position there, yeah? Hosting the show. That's what you're supposed to say, isn't it? I think the thing with comedy.
You're schmoozing me, Anne.
With comedy, you become unemployable, and I've got to that point. I can't have anyone tell me what to do on a job, because you're a producer, writer, director, you're doing everything.
Nice and design.
Yeah. And look at that, that's all right, isn't it? It's going to work on radio. And, yeah, it's just, I think 5 years' time, just having a laugh again, just doing
so
it.
So are you a strategist?
No, I think I've got a really, an amazing show that people come to Edinburgh, not, I think my show's great now, but I think I've got an amazing show that'll come out, and it might take 5 years, do you know what I mean? But I just want to get better and better. No one, you know. I just like people coming along and laughing.
So do you want to do a plug for your show?
Yeah. It's called Al Pitcher the Wolf Catcher, the 2010 return. No, it's in 5 years. Al Pitcher the Wolf Catcher, it's at the Cafe Royal, 6:40. Come along.
Fantastic.
So Lynn, it's very
do you want to plug your
I want
shows?
To plug my show, yeah. Funny Women at the Fringe starts this Friday, the 19th to 28th. Best of Female Comedy at the Fringe. And we have 10 late night shows, 11:45 at the Underbelly, and we have 6 afternoon shows also at the Underbelly. And my darling Hannah back there has got the flyers, of course. If you stand still long enough, you'll get a poster shoved on you as well.
And I'm seeing that on Thursday.
You are, you're in one next week.
Fantastic.
And so, Jan.
Come and see. Yeah, are you on Thursday as well?
No.
Can't remember what day you're on.
I'm on Saturday.
Saturday.
I'm doing it.
And do you want to plug your children's show?
I'm doing a children's show at 5:20 at the Pleasant Dome. And it's all improvised stuff. I'm also in the final, I got into another final, really, of the Amuse Moose competition, which is on Tuesday in the Underbelly at 12:30 at
and
night.
And what's your children's show called?
Yarn Bards. Everyone always goes, Yarn Birds. No, Yarn Bards. That's... one of the most annoying things.
Shakespeare.
Yes. Yarn Bards. Oh, it's so clever.
You're so Shakespeare.
Yeah, I know.
What about you, Matt?
What? Answer the question or plug the...
Plug
your show.
I'll play a pink hippo in Tim Vine's Current Puns. But I'm on stage for about a minute, it's great. You can't see my face.
Really moved on since the Babylon.
It's, I'm doing that. I'm doing a couple of other gigs around, which I haven't thinking yet. But just the 5 years thing, I'd just like to still be doing stand-up. And I don't mind being an MP. I want to go into politics. Yeah.
Wow.
Oh, thanks so much. So vote for me in 5 years. Cheers.
So that's what you're going to do? Become
I've always been kind of interested in it. I did, before the election, I got booked as a Tony Blair tribute act. where I this serious because you can't go to all these Labour Party things. Yeah. I do like a quick press conferencing. So if anyone's got a question, anything at all, I'll answer it in the style of Tony Blair, if you like. So,
anything. What do you think about binge drinking?
Well, that's a good question. Look, all we'll say on it is look. You can't stop people going out and enjoying themselves, and having a pint every now and again is fine. The culture of it, where people go out to get out of their faces and ruin, quite frankly, town centres for the rest of us on Friday and Saturday nights, is absolutely... you can't support it. So we're going to crack down on it, and more from that in 5 years.
Go on, do Tony Blair now.
Quick round, then. Matt Ford, Most Honest. Janice Fair and Lynn Parker and Al Pitcher.
Oh!
Al won. So that's a draw between Al and Matt.
Is it?
Winner, yeah. So round of applause for all you guys. Go upstairs and have a drink. And if you want,
thank you.